Well, I can't wait to meet our host. I hear this is only one of his beat parties.
Stay positive, the love will come back to me. Stay positive, the love will come back to me. Stay positive, the love will come back to me. Stay positive, the love will come back to me.
Hey, Harry Day with Two Truths, a Lie. I recorded an episode two nights ago, and the next morning, edited the episode, put the intro music, and put the outro music on there, and set it up. My phone just died. Okay. And published it, which means I opened it to the internet. And it probably hadn't been 4 hours. I was going through my email, and I had an email from Spotify, who's my platform now, that they had taken down my episode because it did not mesh, not their words, with how Spotify operates and allows content. And I'm sure it was robotics or not robotics, but really, you know, certain words they catch, like that trigger a, you know, what is the word? I am so not having my words right now. I guess because it's midnight. I was out in the sun all day long. You know, it triggers an alarm, and so they go and check out your... They couldn't have listened to the whole hour. If they'd listened to the content, they'd have let it go. But the title of the episode was History of Hate. So it was just, if you think about it, it's just informational on hate. It's not saying hating on Jews. It's saying history of hate. And I had content of ancient philosophers and their views on hate and the neurological research on the brain and tests on people looking at images that they did not like to find out where it fires up inside your brain. And it's like 5-6 places in your brain. So it's not just one spot. It's a circuit. They called it the hate circuit. You know, this is informational stuff. You know, you teach about how hate derives, the history of it, maybe some early versions of hate or wrath or similar words that caused wars and revenge and all these things. And when you learn about this stuff, most normal people would take it as something they wouldn't want to be a part of. They learn about it. They say, oh, that's how that worked. Interesting, interesting. And then you move on. You know a little bit more about something so you can control it yourself within you. Well, I obviously didn't go through the hour-long content, and there was not a lot of content that I could find on hate or the history of hate to do a full episode. And so I was like, well, I guess I could go with some examples. And every other hit that I had on researching hate was anti-Semitism, you know, the hate of Jews, or Jewish religion, or Jewish people, or Jewish history, or even just the stigmata and stereotyping of it, because that's what a lot of it boils down to. So I'm not going to put this in the title of this episode that I'm having to redo, and I'm not even in my office studio doing it. I'm just laying in bed. It's midnight. I just watched James Bond movie where Daniel Craig plays James Bond, and James Bond finally dies, being the hero, gets blown up by a bunch of missiles, destroying some kind of nerve toxin factory on an island between Japan and Russia. So do not be alarmed. He took care of it. All the awful bioweapon was killed, was you know, wiped out. And we just need to raise a toast, shed a tear, because James Bond finally died. I'm all choked up. No, this is just going to be a quick throw together episode. Who knows what I'll get into to talk about? The topic won't be hit on very long. I haven't decided what a topic is yet, but once I'm done, then I'm like, I know what the topic will be as far as the name on the episode. It's interesting, and I don't know if I've done a podcast on wokeism. From things I've read, it seems like it's starting to pass behind us. There's still an amount out there. Obviously, the leftist media is doing it, and liberal far left schools like Columbia in New York, they're don't send your kids there. You may think you're going to get a great education. Your kid may come home so far left, you don't know who they are. And of course, there's far right too. Far right, religious zealots. I don't know what else is far right. You can't say Trumpers are far right. Trumpers are people who are Main Street American people. They want a booming economy and good jobs. And, try to keep our hands out of other people's wars. Stop sending billions and trillions of dollars overseas. Lower the taxes. Lower interest rates. I mean, what common tax-paying working American does not want that? So that's not extremism. So I'm not real sure what is on the far right. The far left, they're pro mass immigration with, jumping the line, breaking the rules to do it. It's illegal. There's all these protesters causing damage and fires and anarchy in the streets. The radical agendas of these sects of America, and that's SECT. If they want to be who they are, if a trans person wants to be trans, be trans. I don't see why you need parades, but if you want a parade, go have your parade. I'm not going. And that's just an example of all these small sects of people or groups around the country that you have to put together to try to get your far left voter bloc together. You got all, and I'm not going to say they're all freaks, but it just doesn't seem natural, a lot of it. I'm not saying that about gay people, because I've known people, I know people, I have friends who are gay, and it is obvious they've always been that way. Now, not as a child. They're not wanting to be with another boy. It's not like that. They grow up and they're attracted to other males or other females. You don't see it in nature? Doesn't matter. That's how they are. That's fine. You want a parade? Half your parade. Pay for your parade. I'm probably not going to go. I might go. I'm not adverse to all of that. No one should be. Let live and let live. Excuse me. Live and let live. That's how it should be. Oh, there's no ice in my drink to rattle. Okay, so I got into politics somehow. Let's jump out of that with the rambling episode. I remember the wokeism. So that's where a lot of your censorship comes from. You can't talk about certain people, and you can't say certain words, or you will get nailed to the wall by, I mean, it doesn't hurt, pointed fingers, glares, people yelling at you because you said something at the baseball field that's gay, and then parents who have a gay kid, and they probably wish their kid wasn't gay, but they is, so they support them. They hear that and they lose their shit. It's not that's not an experience I've had, but I promise you it happens. And so freedom of speech gets infringed. And, you know, there's things you shouldn't say. And you may say something and catch hell for it. And that's life. That's been life since man and woman have talked. But it just gets so ticky-tacky now. But what you can and can't say. I can't publish on the internet a podcast episode describing the history of hate and I guess the inner physical source within mental source of hate and why it happens or where it comes from. And it's studied so people can try to get rid of it, you know. Hate's not a great thing. It's not a nice thing. Now, there were things where hate has kicked in survival instincts. And you might not want to call it hate as much as you want to call it survival instinct, where someone does something bad or something bad may happen to you or someone around you. And you need to defend yourself or you need to take out the violent offender who could harm or kill someone. You know, we can protect ourselves and our loved ones and strangers if we want. I would protect anyone's child on this planet. I'm 54 years old. You know, I've lived a lot of life. It's been really good. If I need to go tackle a gunman so a classroom of kids can jump out a window, I'm doing it. And it's not to be a hero. It's for the kids. I've been all about kids. Probably, I mean, I always got along with kids. I had fun playing with kids before I had kids. I have god kids that are older than my kids that I babysat often, played with often, and still see now. They're in their 20s. Send them a little money on their birthdays and Christmas. Talk to them when I'm at my friend's house when they do come home and visit. I don't know. When I had kids, it changes your life. That's just obvious. And so you just get so attuned to caring for kids that it just, and a lot of people probably don't do this or feel this, I'm different than that, though. When my son was ready to play baseball, I started coaching baseball because I'd played baseball. When he wanted to play football, this is young ages. I didn't play a lot of football after middle school, but I knew enough to help. Then, you know, it's a huge team. You need, it's all dads coaching. They need people to be there to help keep it organized. When we were on the sidelines at games, the first year, my job was to keep the football players that were on the sidelines from getting in arguments with the cheerleaders that were in their class. Because a cheerleader would look at the scoreboard and see that they were losing 0-30 and say to the players, "Oh my God, y'all are losing. Y'all suck." I've seen this. And so then the boys are yelling at the girls. The girls are yelling at the boys. You got to stop it fast. And then my game. I played golf in high school. And I lettered. So I was on the travel team 3 years. They didn't have much of a golf team at MRA anymore, where I go, where I went to school, where my kids go to school. And athletic director and some coaches were like, "We should really get a team going and get the golf program back online." They had individual golfers at tournaments. We had one that was so good, he was winning all the low medalists. He went on to play college golf and went on to play a little pro tour golf. He helps with our varsity team now. We had a lot of people show up to do golf, and it was just the head administrator at the school who plays golf who was heading up the team. And so after the first meeting, parent meeting, I was like, "Hey, I play golf here. I'd love to help. If you need help, I'd love to help." And it didn't take them half a second to say, "I need help," because there's a lot of kids. And, you know, one man or woman, it's kind of hard to run a varsity team and a junior varsity team and a beginner's group. And that's what we do. And so I do the junior varsity team and the beginners. And I work the tournaments where they're in town. And something that I knew I wanted to touch on for this little Redux episode, since they wouldn't do my History of Hate episode, I saw something today that I loved. And the reason why it was so great is because they haven't had one. We had a state champion. This is private schools in Mississippi. A state championship tournament here in Gluckstadt, Madison County, for girls. Now, we have two girls who are so good at golf, they're on our varsity team. And they're 8th and 9th graders. And they've been on the varsity team since we started because they've played golf all their lives. I don't know if one of them's dad or mom play golf or not. She's just really good. So we only had two girls. There were no girls' tournaments. So you either played, if you're good enough to play with a varsity team, that's when you got to play tournaments. Well, with the school coaches and athletic directors working together, we finally got a lot of girls playing golf, a lot of girls that were good at golf in school, getting on teams and having teams formed and getting together and having tournaments. We didn't have many this spring, but we had a state tournament championship today. And Oak Hill up in West Point had two girls that both shot under par on 18 holes. So they won it. They got low medalists too. Our girls shot just over par. They didn't have the best day. I'm kind of surprised because usually they shoot better. But these girls they were playing against are a little older. But we had our first, I guess you'd say academy or private school girls championship tournament maybe ever in the state. I don't know the background specifics. But I know we hadn't had a girls state championship the last 3 years, but before that we hadn't had golf teams. And our head coach really spearheaded this and got other schools really drawing girls in to play golf. If you have any golf experience, get on the team, come to practices and get better. And some have. And we had, and I think we only had eight groups of three between six, seven schools. I'm not certain. One big school here didn't send any. I don't think they're very good. We have three pretty good girls, and then we brought in a fourth off the nine-holer group, which is five or six girls who are okay at golf. They want to get better. They want to learn. They can move the ball down. They can chip. They can putt a little bit. You know, they don't score great, but they're learning. Now, whether any of them learn before they graduate enough to play, I don't know. We're trying to get an actual girls team together because we had three girls and two played on the varsity. And the other one was junior varsity, and we recruited out of the school a few of them basketball players. Another one, an athlete, an archery champion, and a soccer player. And when, you know, a lefty, her swing is really good. She's only been playing a year. She had a really bad day today, but she was out there playing. And here's the thing about these girl tournaments. They don't get mad. They support the golfers they're playing with that aren't even from their school. And they enjoy themselves. I mean, they'll get a little miffed if they're playing bad or have some bad shots. But they can control themselves so much better than boys on the course, which is what I coach. I coach the I already said I coached the boys and the JV team and the beginners. Our JV squad's really good. They won like three tournaments this spring. And so somehow I got the accolades for that. I'm like a babysitter, but I'm not a babysitter. I'm like making sure they're not, I guess, drinking beer on the course and that they're practicing and that they're not, you know, dicking around and messing with other ones and screwing them up or picking on someone. And that happened. Gosh, this happened. We had a qualifier. We had to send the junior varsity to the junior varsity state championship. We had our two best junior varsity guys who aren't quite ready for the varsity team were already in for the tournament. So we needed four more. So we sent out 7-8 golfers, including my son, to play 9 holes. And whoever shot the low scores got to play in the junior varsity tournament. And I was running it. And so we're playing the front 9 at Deerfield out in Madison County. And it's smooth. 3 groups, maybe 4 groups. I think 3 groups. Because some of the ones already in the tournament were playing a practice round in front. Except for one of the kids with them. He was qualifying. And so they're making their way through the front 9. And by the time we're on the last 4 holes, the first group's almost to the end of 9. So I've got to go way ahead and get his scorecard before they all leave. And so I do that, come back. And the last 2 groups of 5 kids together have morphed into a fivesome instead of a threesome and a twosome. And then one of the kids that's already played went back out, found them. And so there's 6 kids playing last 2 holes. And they're trying to qualify. And there's too many kids on the hole. It's not bad going through the fairway, right? Because you're spread out and hitting your shots. Everybody's being civil. I'm there to make sure of that. They play 8. They tee off on 9. They get to their balls, and my son says, I left my 5-iron back on 8 fairway. And I'm thinking, this is in a very brief moment of time. I'm thinking, well, if you hit your 5-iron from way out in the fairway to a hole, it's not like you laid it down and then picked up another club. You put it in your bag, and you go. So what had to have happened was there's too many kids on the hole, there's distractions, and he left his 5-iron in the rough. So I had to go back and get it. I have a golf cart. They're walking up 9. So I go back, all the way back to nearly the beginning of 8, not that far, but I go get his club, turn around, I'm riding back. They're all on the green. So there's 6 kids on the green. 3 are standing around the hole while one is still trying to chip up and one is trying to putt. And I think another is waiting to putt from off the green. I'm like, guys, you got to spread out. Well, one of the kids who really, 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 really wants to qualify because he's never qualified. He's a pretty decent golfer. But I've known him since Ethan started baseball and I started coaching. And that's like 5th grade, 4th grade. He brings trouble to him. He talks too much. He gets in trouble. He does dumb things even though he's a smart kid. He's a talented kid at a lot of different things. He's trying to qualify, and 2 or 3 of the kids in that group of 6 are messing with him, saying things. He gets flustered. He makes a triple bogey on the last hole. Well, so did another kid who's younger than him who was vying for the spot. He made a triple. I'm not sure what the rest of the kids made. I know my son didn't qualify. So I get all, we're done. He's flustered. He's telling me, this kid that was getting, you know, they're bringing up stuff he did last fall that was bonehead dumb. But he didn't think it was going to get him in trouble at the time, and it did. So they're reminding him and just, you know. It was Lord of the Flies when I got back to number 9 green with all these kids. If they were left to live on that golf course with no supervision, they'd probably kill and eat the kid who gets in trouble and brings all the trouble on himself by his doings in his mouth. And then whoever's next, who knows? It'd be a fight. But anyway, so one kid shoots. The kid who came in first with the guys already done, the older kid, he qualified. That's 3. So we got 3 more spots. Well, one of the younger kids shoots the low round of the 5 guys. So he gets the 4th spot. Then there's 3 kids who shot the same score. 2 of them tripled that last hole. The one that gets in trouble was really upset about what he shot. He said, do you think if I go to coach tomorrow, he'll change it and put me on the team? And I'm like, I can't. He wasn't here. He's not going to go by hearsay. We're going to go by what I saw and what the cards say. And he'll get the scores and he'll choose. So I'm texting coach. And he's like, well, what are the last 3? Who are the last 3? And it's like, well, one was this kid. He hit it pretty good. He just kind of had a bad last hole. And he's like, okay, well, he's the 5th guy. Now, who are the other 2? I was like, well, one is the younger kid. He tripled the last hole. And one is this kid who gets in trouble all the time and who we had been at times debating putting him off the team for cheating. Not in tournaments, but in practice rounds and in qualifying rounds. Just like he would 3-putt and say he 2-putted. Stuff like that. But, you know, it's not easy to get away with that kind of stuff. I don't understand why they do it. My son would just as well turn in an 8 on a par 4 than cheat. And that's not because I'm bragging on him. That's who he is. He didn't qualify. He was cool with that. He got to play golf. He'll get to come back and play golf. So coach says, well, who should I make the 6th golfer? Young man or gets in trouble man? I was like, young man. He texts back really quickly. You didn't even have to think about it, did you? I was like, no. because young man is always at practice, and young man is always improving his game, and he's got a good attitude, and he doesn't distract people. And the other one, he does all the other stuff. He needs to clean his act up. It's all he has to do. And so I learned that day on the golf course that these kids, these ninth graders, and some above ninth grade, I don't know about the ones below ninth grade, listen to my damn podcast. And then I learned, after telling my kids, who's ninth grade and 11th grade, that they're like, all kinds of people, all kinds of kids listen to your podcast. And it's starting to blow my mind, because I have unloaded deep, embarrassing secrets on this podcast through the years. You know, it started out as life stories, because, you know, I've lived all around the country and done lots of different things and just seen so many cool things and had so many awful things happen to me. And I tell it all. If you've followed this and listened to the catalog of shows that I do, going all the way back, you know, before COVID, I think, it's been at least 3 years, maybe four. You learn a lot about me. And it's come back to bite me a few times, where someone heard something that they might have been involved, I didn't say the name, or someone didn't like my point of view. You know, it's just like a matter of time before I'm like told, I just don't think you need to coach golf because of this podcast influence you're throwing out at the kids. I'm not trying to throw it out at the kids. A, I'm not an employee of the school. I'm a volunteer. That's probably a good thing. And B, it's, you know, people listen to it in Ireland and England and Germany. And I've had hits from every continent on earth looking into the podcast. It blew my mind when I started learning my analytics about the places where people are listening to my content. Blows my mind. Now, I've only had, over 5 years, maybe 6,000 listens. But maybe that's a good thing. I have no idea. I just like doing it. So I'm doing it. Here, you're hearing it. This turned into a golf thing. It's way more positive than the history of hate. So I probably won't put that in the description whatsoever, because there's no way they listen to every podcast episode in the podcast hemisphere. No, it's greater than the hemisphere. The biosphere? The atmosphere? The stratosphere? Hemisphere is half the planet. What is the whole? I guess it's just the sphere. Maybe I should change the title from Too True to Lie to The Sphere. I don't think it'd be an accurate description. It's supposed to be Southern culture. That's kind of the shelf that it's put on, the Southern culture shelf. But, you know, seeing girls' golf teams build up and have tournaments, which we haven't been doing, and it's just going to grow. It's so cool. It's so cool for the girls to get out there and play 18-hole tournaments where it's just all girls, instead of a couple of girls sprinkled throughout a varsity tournament that's all boys, except for the sprinkling of girls, who can be better than most of the boys playing, even though they get to play the girls' tees. That's okay. I've seen some of these girls hit drives as long as my son can hit them. And they're really good at golf. And it's really cool. And their attitude is so admirable. And I won't say their empathy as far as the definition of empathy. But they don't rag on each other. They don't mess with each other. They joke a little bit. Not a lot. It's all about golf. but they're friendly. They don't throw clubs. They don't cuss, as far as I heard, maybe under their breath. They had golf carts of parents and coaches watching them. An audience. More so than I see at boys' tournaments. Boys' tournaments, they get dropped off or they drive to them and play. Girls' tournaments, parents come out and watch them. Now, parents do come watch the boys, but not near as many as this girls' tournament today. It just seems like it was groundbreaking. A man named Randy Watkins, who's been in the golf business for decades, he was, when Annandale out in Madison County was built, he was made head pro. He was hired on as head pro. And they had a little miniature double-wide trailer. It wasn't as long, but it was, you know, it had the depth. But it was obviously a manufactured home. That was his office in the pro shop. I was maybe 10 years old. In that 10 to 12. And I don't know how I got a job as a caddy out there, but I did. And so my mom or a neighbor would drop me off in a Cadillac, and all the blacks that were the caddies, it was all the black men who caddied, and me, and then Randy in the office. And they never sent me out with anybody to caddy because I was too young. And I can't understand why I was out there looking back. So when I was out there, they had benches in these pine trees for shade. And this is summer in Mississippi. I don't even, heat didn't even register when you're young. I'm sitting on these benches playing cards, not for money, playing some card game. I can't remember what we were playing cards, crazy eights maybe, I'm not sure. And they were all so cool to me. But see, I'd been around the group of blacks that took care of the field at the old football stadium in Jackson. I used to hang around them because I worked there too before I was old enough to drive as a runner for the head office. And once the game started, they didn't really have anything to run to gates or the press box or wherever. And so I had all the passes. And so I'd go down the sidelines and watch all the SWAC games, meaning the historical black college football games. The halftimes were the best, obviously. Sonic Boom, Prairie View, oh, they had a good band. Mississippi Valley, all those teams. And then the SEC games that played their state. Ole Miss, sometimes Southern, or when Ole Miss and State played Southern. State played Southern more than Ole Miss. And then the Ole Miss State game, that was something. But I'm not getting all that. But I always hung out with Eddie and his crew. They always got KFC chicken box lunches when the game started. And I would always go find mine or go to the press box and take one. Because I wanted to eat too, you know, what they were eating. And just, they were all so cool, and I hung out with them. And same as the caddy guys, when I never got to work, Randy would say, "Hey, why don't you clean the grill?" So I'd go clean the grill, and he'd give me $5. And that was my work day at the golf course caddying. Little did I know that when I was 30 years old, I'd be caddying at a major resort on the East Coast, which I got fired from after a year and a half, but that's another story that is in the backlog. That's when I first met Randy. And I remember when I finally ran across him after forever on one of the courses that he's running here now. They're running three. And I told him that story. He laughed and laughed. You were that little kid who was sitting out in the pine trees playing cards with the black guys. But everybody's cool. So he was so emotional without crying because he does so much for youth golf in Mississippi, mostly this region, but I mean, a lot of these golf courses allow us to go practice and play. When we do tournaments, the schools pay for the, for them running the tournament and letting us use the course when their, you know, their members can't play while we're out there playing. So there's so much youth golf positivity and promoting the game and expanding the game, and it's a beautiful thing. But he was excited, as we all were, all coaches were, that the girls' golf program is growing in Central Mississippi. That's us. Hopefully wider than that. The girls got to get out there and get better if they want to have full teams. You know, 6-girl teams, and you take top 4 scores. I guess that's how it works. I wouldn't know how they do it with the girls' teams. That's how they do it in the boys' teams or varsity teams with our girls playing varsity. They're letting them play both. There's been no talk. I mean, there's been talk, but no decisions on whether the girls can play both. They allowed them this year because we really want to get girls' tournaments going. It'll be interesting to see. I know a lot of you don't care. That's fine. Maybe you're just enjoying my hoarse voice. Not that I was yelling today, but it was, I don't know, it was a beautiful day today. It really was. The sun was really warm, but there was a little bit of a breeze. Wasn't sweaty. Of course, I'm riding around in the golf cart handing out water and helping girls. I really didn't have to help them find the golf balls because it was an open course. But, you know, make some rulings, you know, you went out of bounds, you got to do this, you hit it in the water, you got to do this. Advice for our girls. Couldn't read putts, though, and that's my specialty when I caddied. I could read a putt, and if a golfer could hit it where I say hit it, he'll drop it, even long putts. I'm good. I read Ethan's putt one day on number 7. We were just out playing, I guess. And, no, it was 18 hole something. It was the junior varsity state championship. We won that. Ethan's score didn't go. He broke 100. But he sunk like a 40-foot putt on this down-sloping green that broke, just barely broke right, and at the end went left. And I told him where to buy. There was a sprig of grass that's a different kind than the green. It's called poana. A little bit of poana circle. I was like, put it right over that. It was about 15 feet away. He put it right by it. And the ball curved right. It was dropping down. It was getting slow, but it's tracking. It's tracking, and it just dropped in the cup. He made a birdie. On a hole, he usually hits it in the water. Not usually. But youth golf, man, that's my thing. Let me loop it back around to working with kids. It's just, I mean, I volunteered to do this. If they offered me a job to be a golf coach and paid me, I would do it. I've got money in the bank. Mainly because my father passed away. But he set me up to be the artist that I am and the writer that I am. To chase the dream. Dare to be great, as they say. Participate in the arts. And it's something that I've gotten good at. And it's something that people buy. Enjoy. But, making a living as an artist is hard. People that really want to make a living and an artist, most of them teach and do art, or you have support. I've always had support, and I wouldn't have it if my supporters didn't think it was good. So I keep doing it, but just working with the kids, man, it's working for a better future. You know, You subliminally, you know, teach these kids kindness and a little bit of understanding, a little bit of patience, and that, you know, bad moments in sports can be overcome and you can get back to the good moments. Or, you know, a little advice, you know, someone's just losing their shit out on the golf course or the baseball field. You just got to sit them down and say, hey, think outside the sport for just a moment of how good you have it. You live in a free country. You live in a place with running water and air conditioning and heat in your home, and it's enclosed so bugs and snakes don't get in. Go to a third world country and see how people live. I've done it. I've seen it. It's rough. And that's their life, and they like it because that's the way it's always been. There's something about city living, though, that's just so unorganic. You know, it's all wires and concrete and air pollution and light pollution and eyesores, and there's too many people, way too many people. And that's where all your big population centers are and your big voter blocks. And they don't have a natural thought in their brains because there's no forests and wild animals and things that you can just relax and look and listen and take in and see how nature lives. It's the purest thing you could do. It really is. Besides swimming in nice cool water, that's really awesome. Everybody loves that. Anyway, this is the substitute off the cuff podcast episode because they wouldn't let me explain the history and the neurological science of hate. I guess I should have done it of peace or happiness. Oop, I said peace. I'm supposed to sign off. Not before. Okay, you know, I always talk about family members. If you're having problems with them, fix it. Family is the closest thing you'll ever have. Other than your own skin, but don't be selfish. Keep the family relationships healthy. If you got family that don't live with you or live somewhere else, get in touch. Say hi. Let them know you're thinking about them. Now you have your friends, right? Your friends list. Let's try to be a little kinder to each other. If you have old friends you hadn't seen or talked to in a long time, I guess if you're older, and you still love them, think of them fondly, get in touch. Shrink the world a little bit, man. Let people know you're thinking about them. It makes people feel good about themselves, feel a little more wanted, feel a little more important. It's good to feel that way. It gives you confidence. And then my biggest kicker that I just really want to push is interaction with strangers. You do it every day. If you go to the gas station, you go to the grocery store, you go to the post office, you're younger. So now I've got to gear some of this towards the younger people who have pirated my damn stupid, you know, I don't make any money from podcast episodes that I'm just going to keep doing anyway. You know, sometimes people are having bad days. Sometimes people are having bad lives. And an ounce of kindness and just asking how someone's doing, and you don't have to know them. Now, if it seems like, and this is where I have to gear this towards the younger people listening, and I'm not going to do this very much because you should be reading books. You gotta meet people, talk to people. You may never ever see them again, but be kind. I've seen it so many times where I'm just, I'll say hi. Someone asks me how I'm doing, and you pull my string, you're gonna get talked to. You're gonna hear about it. But maybe people want to hear. Maybe people want people to listen. And being kind to strangers, you have that ripple of kindness, right? You hear me say that before? You've put out the ripple of kindness to people. It can be your family. It can be your friends. It can be strangers. And they feel kindness. They spread it too. They're like, oh, there's good people out there. You would not believe how many people think there's no good people out there. They hate life. Everyone's an asshole. And they're just existing. That's no way to live. I listened to this today. Someone said, it's better to live than just exist, even if it's good or bad. You need to have experiences. You need to learn new things, try new things. You need to give. You know, I give to charities. Maybe you could take clothes you don't like anymore or clothes that don't fit anymore, sack it up, tie it off, and drop them in these donation boxes they have in parking lots here and there. I do that a lot. Not a lot, but like 3 or 4 times a year. That goes to, I think they're mostly veteran or family of veterans. They've earned it, right? I don't know if I'll have easy listening in the background, easy listening music from the television. In the background. I should turn it up higher. But I always feel like it's conflicting if I do that. So, it's probably 1 a.m. now. No, it's 10 till 1, right? I got a dog on the bed. Got a dog on the couch. Dog on the couch is going to have to go outside because we don't trust that dog at night. He'll poop by the stairs. Well, that's a beautiful image for, you know, what really is an upbeat episode. Anyway, I hope y'all have enjoyed this. I'm sorry you couldn't learn about hate. It wasn't a negative thing, I promise. And peace.